This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Well, thank you and welcome to our little class this afternoon. I'm really looking forward to spending the next 45 minutes with you. And yeah, I'll ask you the question that you've probably been asked several times today. What's your name?
Judson.
Yeah. Welcome, Judson. You didn't know that this was part of the deal, did you? That's the question you've been asked lots and lots today. What's your name? It doesn't like it. We ask that question all the time. It's just a matter of, you know, getting to know people. Then what's the next question people ask you after they ask you what your name is? That's right. Where are you from? And see, when people ask me that question, where are you from, it feels to me like I need 10 minutes to tell them the story and to explain. I think I forgot something else here. There we go. They were trying to turn me up and they couldn't because I wasn't turned on. You see, I'm one of the few people that you'll meet that has three passports. And so when you ask me where I'm from, it kind of does something to me. Honestly, this is part of the deal. Even today, as I was going around, people would say, "Oh, you're Stephen Garrett, where are you from?" And I would just, you know, kind of block that portion of my mind and just say, "I'm from Ontario, Canada." That works the best. And I'm looking over this group today, and I'm wondering how many of you are third culture kids? And before I get you to raise your hands, I'd like to just talk about what a third culture kid is. So it's any child who grew up in a different culture than their parents' home culture. So I'll tell you a little bit about my story. When I was a third culture kid growing up, as far as I know, the term hadn't been invented yet. I didn't realize that I was a third culture kid. But it's a term that has come out in the last couple of years. And it's been really intriguing to me to think about it and talk about it. A quick definition of third culture kid is citizens of everywhere and nowhere. Because you have several places you call home, but nothing really feels totally like home. How many of you are here today because you think you're a third culture kid? Yeah, and I'm so glad you're here. How many of you are here today because your children are third culture kids? And you're wondering what they're maybe going through. And thank you for being here as well. I'm honored to have you here. My mother's here today, and I'm really excited about that. And my wife, Brenda, is here as well. Both of them make me a little nervous, but you can talk to them afterwards. I'd like to read you a poem. This is working. It's a poem entitled Uniquely Me by Alex Graham James. I am a confusion of cultures, uniquely me. I think it is good because I can understand the traveler, the sojourner, the foreigner, the homesickness that comes. I think this is also bad because I cannot be understood by the person who has sown and grown in one place. They know not the real meaning of homesickness that hits me now and then. Sometimes I despair of understanding them. I am an island, a United Nations. Who can recognize either in me but God? That poem I dedicate to all the third culture kids in this room. I feel your pain, at least a little bit. I don't offer to understand you completely because I don't think I can. Each of us has our own story. I'll tell you mine a little bit, and we'll go down through the worksheet. If you're waiting for these words to come up on the screen, they're not going to. You just write down thoughts as we go along. Most of this talk is story, and there's a little bit of, practical thrown in. That was me when I was 3 years old. I was born in Guatemala because my parents were missionaries. I have three citizenships because my dad is American. He was born and raised in Hartville, Ohio. When he was 19, the Vietnam War broke out, and he was called up for service. He talked the army into letting him go to Guatemala. My mom's a Canadian nurse who was really good nurse and a good student, and after she graduated and worked for a while, she decided to go to Guatemala to help the poor people there with their medical needs. And my parents met in Guatemala, and here I am. I was born in Guatemala, and so that gives me this one, a Guatemalan passport. And so, maybe you're here today and you have three citizenships. If you do, I'd love to talk to you, because even though it sounds really glamorous, it's a bit of a pain. Even when coming to Reach, you know, we're coming from Canada with my family, and we get to the border, and I say, one American, three Canadians. And I have to kind of think through it, because I don't really identify as an American. Did you know that it's a felony to enter the U.S. and not claim your American citizenship? They told me that when they handed me my passport, because I got my American passport when I was about 18 years old. And felony just sounds like a big bad word to me, and I don't want one, so... I always declare my American citizenship. We did a trip to Guatemala over New Year's with our family. We're a family of four, and that's a lot of fun. Coming back into the States, I have to use my American passport, right? And you get to the sign, and there's a line, and it says, American citizens this way, all others that way. And that those signs exist in Houston airports and airports like that. And so we get there, and I'm sort of like, I think we need to go this way. And my wife's like, but that's not us. And we're not going to separate, so what to do? We often have stopped and asked one of those helpful people that are there directing, not traffic, but people. And they say, oh, well, like I put it to them this way. I say, I'm an American citizen. None of them are. They're like, American line, just all go over there. That doesn't make sense to me, but okay. So we do. When I was three, I lived in a jungle, and I really enjoyed it. And my parents had a culture in our home, and I would say it was somewhat North American, and we lived in a small jungle village, and I really liked the way my neighbors lived, and I really liked the way they treated me, too. When I was 3 years old, we went on a furlough to Canada, and I went from that to southwestern Ontario, and I met my grandma, my mom's mom, for the first time, and I'm told that we had a really great relationship. We kind of liked each other. We met in the strawberry patch. My grandma grew strawberries and picked them, and I ate them out of her basket. I could speak Spanish, but not English. I could understand both languages. So my grandma would talk to me, and I'd just eat another strawberry and answer her in Spanish. And that was kind of our relationship. And that's my family when I was born. You can see kind of behind there, even though the picture's not really great, that is a poinsettia plant or bush or whatever. I don't know, 6 feet tall. And so, yeah, we lived in the jungle. When you grow up in the jungle and you then suddenly find yourself in North America, my parents always talked about going home on furlough, and it didn't feel like home at all. When I was 8 years old, our family moved from Guatemala back to North America, to Canada, and about a day or two before we flew, my great-grandma died. And so the first thing we did in the States was go to her viewing. And funerals and death are, I think, probably one of the greatest cross-cultural experiences you can have. And we went to the funeral home, and we were waiting in the car with my brothers and sisters while my parents went in. You probably aren't allowed to do that anymore, but we did. We were five. And I couldn't wait anymore. I really had to go. And my older brother and sister tried to talk me out of it, but there were lots of trees around, so I went out behind a tree. And when my parents got back to the vehicle, they said, "You just absolutely cannot do that here." I was eight. Both my children were born in Guatemala in the same area that I grew up in, but this is no longer a little village in the jungle. It's a bustling little town, commercial center, same place geographically, but the town has changed immensely. But we came back to Canada, and we went to our first viewing. And in Guatemala, when somebody dies, they bury within 24 hours. And the night of their death, then you get together and you sit around and kind of stay with the body. And the neighbors all come, and the different churches have church services, and they serve coffee and sweet bread. And at midnight, those who are still there kind of get a meal. And the goal is you kind of show your appreciation or your connection and support to the family by staying all night. And so the later you stay, the more support you give them. And it's just a lot of fun. So we went to our first viewing in Canada. And first of all, we all had to get dressed up. Jeffrey was 10. He couldn't quite sort that out. And then we got to the funeral home, and there's this long line to go past the casket. And he's like, when do we get the coffee? He spied a coffee pot over there. He's like, can I get coffee now? I'm like, no, that's only for the family. He's like, well, when do we get to play? I'm like, no, we stand here and we'd be very quiet. He's like, what are we doing here? Funerals are no fun at all. What a shock. When I was 4 years old, on my fourth birthday, actually, it's one of my first memories. You'll hear about it a little more tomorrow. John Troyer was killed. Those of you who are familiar with the book Awaiting the Dawn, was killed about 3 days before my fourth birthday. And so on my fourth birthday, the missionary families were now leaving Guatemala, and we moved back to Canada kind of on short notice. And I went to public kindergarten, and we found my kindergarten report cards a couple of years ago, and we kind of laughed at them as a family because the teacher described me as a very timid and quiet child. One who spent his recesses alone, out by the road, watching for trucks going by. And I would ask her what's in the trucks and where they're going. So that was kind of my world. Thinking back, you know, I was 5 years old when I went to kindergarten. I had moved kind of out of one world into another, plunged into one. And my siblings laughed at me. But I kind of laugh at them, too. They had their moments. My sister one time, she went to a different school, a Christian school. Her teacher couldn't find her, and so they went throughout the school looking for her, and finally they found her in the bathroom. And she was there at the sink, and she turned one tap on. It was cold. And then she turned the other tap on. It was hot. At the same tap. This is cold. Hot. This is amazing. I mean, whoever thought of that? There was a fire drill, and the whole school, you know, within 90 seconds got outside in straight rows. They did the count, and they realized in one of the classes, grade 3 or 4, there was one student missing. And so they counted again, and yeah, there's one student missing. And they counted again, and they were still short. So they went back into the school, because this had never happened before, and they went through. He wasn't in the classroom. Couldn't find him. They weren't even sure who it was until they found my brother, my older brother. He was in the library reading a book. He had heard the buzzer, but he didn't know what it meant. Thankfully, the building wasn't burning down. This was my kindergarten picture, and looking at it now and knowing Central American culture, if you do, I mean, I've got myself circled, but do you see the stance? That is such a Central American stance for a picture. And there I am. None of my friends are doing that. They all have their hands by their sides. I just think that is a funny picture. So we're talking about culture shock. And we could talk about lack of belonging. And I grew up, and it just, growing up in Canada, it just felt like I didn't fit in. I was different. I was the kid that, you know, spoke two languages, and I wasn't proud of it. And then there were words in English that I should know, and I didn't. And there were things that my friends could do, and I couldn't. I remember them introducing me to the game of baseball. And some of you are nodding your heads. Softball, baseball, we call it in Canada. Do you know how complex that game is? It has so many little itty-bitty rules. And I started in grade 3 getting used to softball rules. And my friends, my cousins, who were my best friends, we were at their place, and they said, okay, let's play catch. Well, I had no idea. I had only thrown rocks before. And they said, you need a glove. Do you use a left or a right? I said, well, either one. It doesn't really matter. And they said, no, like, you either need a left or a right. Which arm do you throw with? And I said, well, either one. He said, no, you don't. Here, take the ball. Throw it. So I threw it with my right arm. He said, okay, now throw it with your left arm. And I could throw just as well with my left arm. That has changed. They said, well, actually, you know, the glove on your left hand, that's kind of the more common one, so why don't you just go with that one? And I started throwing with my right. So those are the things you just don't know because you don't grow up with them. By the age of 18, third culture kids have experienced more than most people will in their lifetime. I like that to just sink in a little bit, because when I found this is not original with me, this is in some of the reading I did in preparation for this talk, this made so much sense to me. Because I've said for many, many years, I could die tomorrow, and I feel like I've lived more than most people do when they're 70. And part of the reason for that is because growing up in a different culture, you're exposed to so much more. You realize that people do things differently, and that's okay. It's not wrong, it's just different. And then there's that whole world of experiences that happen that you get to do that other people don't. Like that one. Probably 13 by now, we lived in our little village that had grown into a bustling town by then. And two hands are not enough to count the friends and acquaintances that I knew well that were killed and just shot. And sometimes I was there and helped to put them into the body bag. And, you know, you kind of live through that, and it's traumatic. And it kind of messes with you, and you're never quite the same again. And so about that age, 13 years ago, my greatest fear was just being killed in the street. I didn't realize until later that this thing here, Canadian citizenship and American citizenship, probably was pretty much of a bubble and a guarantee that that wouldn't happen to me. And it would take a while to explain that. This is my son Jeffrey when he was 3. He's 13 now. But just talking a little bit about that broad experience that you get to have as a third culture kid. I looked for a picture of him in his little blue pajamas, but I couldn't find one. So this one will have to do. He was this age, and for some reason, he was with me this particular morning. I had gone over to the school. He was still in his pajamas, and I had taken my vehicle over there, and I was just going to do something real quick, and then we were going to go back for breakfast. And he would always sit on the little console of my pickup truck, I was at the school when I got the call from a very good friend that his stepfather had been gored by a cow. And so I got to the truck as fast as I could. I took Jeffrey along. We went directly, drove the 7 kilometers out to the town where this had happened. The man was really injured. He was unconscious. We got him into the truck as best we could. I explained to Jeffrey that a cow had hurt him and that we needed to get him to the clinic just as soon as we could. And he sat up there on the little console, and he'd turn around and look at the man with the blood on his shirt that had gotten hurt by the cow. He was there when we got to the clinic. He was there when the nurses did the vital signs on him. He was there when they covered him with the sheet. The man had died in the back seat of my truck. That night, we went to the wake, and we all sat around, and our church was going to have part in the service. And Jeffrey was sitting beside me, and I thought to myself, I wonder how much he's taken in. And I said to him, do you remember the man that got hurt by the cow? He's like, yeah. I said, where is he now? In the box. I said, okay, what are we going to do tomorrow? Put him in the ground. And he was 3. And so you have your story. And you have that broad expanse of experiences that hardly fit into a lifetime of 70 years. And you have it. And you're not 20 yet. It's pretty amazing. Culture shock, sense of belonging, lack of feeling of belonging, feeling misunderstood. Those are frustrations. I'd like to talk about some advantages. Multilingualism. You can speak more than 2 languages. How many of you can speak more than 2 languages? See, that is a blessing. Do you know what I love to do? I love to read accounts in my Spanish Bible and compare them to my English Bible. There's something more than multilingualism. There is multiculturalism, where you understand more than one culture. You've lived in more than one culture, and one more than one culture makes sense all by itself. Try to mix them, and it doesn't make sense as much. And now we're inside your mind or inside your heart, where things don't make sense anymore. And you've got the people over here that you really love, and you've got the people over here that you really love, but you try to get those 2 to go to church together and do the same things, and it doesn't make sense. But that's you. I listed it under advantages because I think it's an extreme advantage. You realize that even though nowhere really feels like home and you can be completely yourself, or everything completely makes sense, you have been given a tremendous gift to relate to different cultures everywhere. So I grew up in Guatemala, but I feel like there are so many things that make sense to me because of the incredible gift I've been given of growing up in Central America and also North America and having parents that are North American. So just to illustrate this point, I guess, our son Jeffrey is 13, and our church sponsored a family from Pakistan, and they came to Canada, and we met them. Jeffrey was born and raised in Guatemala until he was 10, and he has this, I'm going to call it ethnic, I should have written it down because now I'll have trouble thinking, but an ethnic preference or partiality, anybody who's dark-skinned, he just kind of gravitates toward them. He loves those people because those were the people that took care of him when he was little. That was the color of his friends when he was growing up. Yeah, we'll put that there for a while and think about that. And the people that our church sponsored, the family, they were from Pakistan, dark-skinned, and he immediately was drawn to them. And we had them over. I have never been to Pakistan, but I'd love to go there with them. There are so many things that they do that we do, and it makes sense. And I know very little or next to nothing about Pakistani culture, but there's something familiar there. And it feels kind of like you're going home. And here we were in Canada, and we would get together, and we had wonderful times. And we do have wonderful times. So you have an intercultural sensitivity. It's more than tolerance. It's an understanding that even if things are different, a little bit different, it's okay. It's not wrong. It's just different. There are different ways of doing things, and that's just fine. What are some of our weaknesses as third culture kids? Because I'm sure we have them. I have three listed there for you. Difficulty in establishing deep relationships. And I find that to be true. I struggle personally to really, really put deep roots down in relationships. Because all my life, I've had to say goodbye to my friends. All my life, the people around me at some point are going to leave. And so I think it's a subconscious kind of self-defense thing where I'm not going to get too close because it's going to hurt too much when we have to pull away. My cousins still kind of laugh at me, my reaction when I was 14. So I lived in Guatemala from the time I was 1 to 4 years old, and then we were in Canada until it was safe to go back. We went back for 3 years. When I was 8 years old, my family moved to Canada. My parents did me a great service of moving our whole family to Canada. I went to school in a Christian school in Canada for grade 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And that's probably why I'm speaking English to you today, because of those years. And it's because of those years that there's a school back in El Chal, pretty much designed off of the school that I went to in Canada. Those years were a tremendous gift. And then when I was 14, we were moving back to the jungle town because they really needed my dad. And my dad took my mom along with him, and we got to go too as kids. And I wasn't too sure. It sounded like a big adventure to me. I didn't realize how much work it would be. But my good friends that taught me how to throw a baseball and which glove you use on which hand, they came over to our house to say goodbye to us. And the women, you know, kind of stood around in groups and hugged and cried. And the men went over and talked about the truck because they didn't know what else to do. And then the time came, and it was time for me to say goodbye to my good friends and my cousins that we had spent 6 years with, working on their farm in the summer. And they, it was time because they were going to go home. And I remember going around, and I said, see ya. And, we'll see you later. We'll see you sometime. Take care. And I turned around and I walked away. Because saying goodbye was just too hard. I think third culture kids can have a tendency, they can find difficulty in committing to anything. Because there are so many options, and they see opportunity, and to commit long-term to something can be really hard. I have on your papers the Crown Prince mentality. I better go into that one and explain it a little bit. See, I think I grew up as a Crown Prince, just as Jeffrey, my son, grew up as a crown prince. You can see here in the picture who his friends were. They were all older than him. Some of them were 12 and 13, and he called the shots. Now, when I say I grew up as a crown prince, my parents made me toe the line, believe me. But I could get anything I wanted, whenever I wanted, from the Guatemalan people around me. I could have anything. food, candy. They'd spend money on me. If I wanted to wear their watch, they'd let me wear their watch for as long as I wanted because of who my father was. See, they appreciated my dad so much, they would do anything for his kid. And that is not a good place for children to grow up. And that is why I'm so thankful for what my parents did for me, and that's why our family chose to make a big move about 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years ago. We moved from Guatemala to Canada. And Jeffrey went from being the only little white kid in his class at school, the smartest, the most well-read, to just being one of the boys. And I can tell you it's been a real wake-up. We may also struggle with education, learning, because we're processing two languages. You can hear it in my talk here. There are some words that I just struggle with, phrases or just even expressing myself sometimes. Do you know who I love talking to? Is somebody who understands English and Spanish, because then I can switch back and forth. Isn't that fun? We're going to go into some strengths. Yes, we have frustrations, we have weaknesses, but I want to end and think about strengths of third culture kids. They tend to be equipped and flexible. They can do almost anything, and oftentimes they're willing to try almost anything. See, they grew up, maybe, as three-year-olds riding in the back of a pickup truck, and it worked, and nothing happened. So why not? They're willing to give it a try. They're adept with relationships. Social groupings don't really seem to matter to them, right? Because they've been with the very poor, and in my case, with the very well-to-do as well. I remember being 6 or 7 years old and going with my dad when he spoke at a military base and sitting with the soldiers, you know, with their AK-47s all around me. It was fine. And you just, it's okay. I'm safe. You kind of grow up that way, and so social groupings don't seem to be a problem. Relating to other races seems natural and normal. And so color doesn't make us different. Those were some of my best friends growing up. So you tend to be adept and just naturally do things that your friends around you that grew up in one culture, in one place, in one community won't be. I remember being at Bible school with my best friend, first cousin, and I said to him one night, let's go over and hang out with those people over there. See, I had just flown in from Guatemala, so I wasn't in my North American mode or mind. He's like, we can't. I said, why not? He said, that's the cool group. I'm like, so what? That's okay. I mean, I know I'm not cool, but let's go over and let, you know, they seem like really nice people. He's like, I don't think we should. I said, well, I'm going. You can decide whether you're coming or not. And we went, and we had a great time. And he couldn't believe it. Because, see, if you're aware of those groupings, we tend to just keep ourselves out. I would say the same thing applies to people of race and ethnicity, something like that is the word. We have an enhanced perspective. We have a focused. I don't think that's what it's supposed to say. It says focused worldview. I would like to say broader worldview. We have an awareness of the needs in the world, because we've seen them with our own eyes. We've lived them in maybe our childhood or growing up. And we can see maybe some of the needs around us more than other people can. We have met with people and worshiped with people and known Christians who have a vibrant relationship with God that are so different than we are. And we realize that God is really, really big. And he carries out his work through so many different people. We see the vastness and the diversity of God's children and his church. I need to come back to the title, that cosmopolitan word. It simply means being at ease in different situations, varied situations. Third culture kids tend to have a natural ability to be adaptable. They're worldly wise, they're street wise. They often know that you carry your wallet in your front pocket and you don't flash your passport just around to anybody, right? Those are things you just know. I found it so interesting when we went to Guatemala for New Year's after not having traveled for 2 years thanks to COVID. Jeffrey was streetwise. Jasmine, who had left Guatemala when she was six, was no longer. She had lost kind of that ability. You're okay with less or with more, and you can kind of walk your way through both of those worlds. You enjoy traveling, you enjoy new situations, and you even enjoy trying new food because you haven't grown up on mashed potatoes and roast beef. Third culture kids are the future. I believe our world is getting smaller, and as an Anabaptist community, we're reaching further. So if you're here this morning and you're feeling confused, you're feeling pain, I would encourage you to realize that you've been given a tremendous gift. God has probably prepared you for a great work in the future. What can you do today? Well, talk to people who are willing to listen. Find other third culture kids to relate to and talk about some of the things you find frustrating and difficult. But realize that you can move through the confused, and you'll always probably be a little confused. I am, at least. You've been given a tremendous gift that God would have you use for him. You have awareness of culture. You know two languages. It's probably easier for you to learn a third. And once you've got the third, they tell me the fourth and the fifth come pretty easily. And that is why children in Europe who speak five languages can pick up another one very readily. I'd like to read you a poem that I have gone back to over and over in my life. It's written by Paul Laurence Dunbar. The title is When All Is Done. Paul Laurence Dunbar, as you can see, was a black man who wrote poetry at the turn of the 19th century. And you who have a feel with history can understand a little bit some of the profiling and prejudices that he lived through. He wrote poems. It was a gift he had, over 400, I think, and short stories. And they were published in this little newspaper that came out weekly in Ohio. A classmate of his, who was not black, printed them. His name was Orville Wright. Him and his brother Wilbur went on later and flew airplanes. It's the same one. But he published this poem. And I think it brings us to sort of the conclusion of the matter. It goes like this: when all is done and my last word is said, and ye who loved me murmur, he is dead. Let no one weep for fear that I should know, and sorrow too that ye should sorrow so. When all is done, and in the oozing clay ye lay this cast-off hull of mine away, pray not for me, for after long despair, the quiet of the grave will be a prayer. For I have suffered loss and grievous pain, the hurts of hatred and the world's disdain. And wounds so deep that love, while tried and pure, had not the power to ease them or to cure. When all is done, say not my day is o'er, that through night I seek a dimmer shore. Say rather that my morn has just begun. I greet the dawn and not a setting sun when all is done. I would say to you, third culture kids and parents of third culture kids, living your life is not easy. But who said it would be? I would challenge you to go to the Bible and find anyone who was a great hero of the faith that had an easy life. I love this poem because it talks about death. And death comes all too soon. I feel that we have been given such a tremendous gift and we have about this much time to use it. And so I would challenge you to embrace the pain and work through it as best you can. Use those painful experiences and those challenges that you face and serve God with them. Some practical advice for re-entry, and we're shifting gears here right at the end. This is maybe for the parents and maybe for you as third culture kids. Don't be surprised if your friends have moved on without you when you come back. Don't be surprised if they can do things you can't. Realize that you are the one who has changed the most, not them. It was hard for me growing up to not blame them for not understanding me better, but I was the one that had changed again. Realize that that changing in you is a preparation and a gift. Being changed and broadened is not a bad thing. It's a good thing. It's a painful thing. Here's some advice that we were given when we moved back to Canada 3 years ago, and I think it's really good. I haven't done so well, but keep your mouth shut for 2 years. Meaning, don't criticize your church or your youth group or the way people do things. Just learn. And try to learn as much as you can before you criticize. Here's one that I got from somebody else. They said, get a garbage truck. And what that means is a close friend that you can just unload to, and they kind of know that you're just unloading, and then they can haul it off to where it needs to go. Get help. Do not fear. Debriefing and counseling can be very, very helpful, and we all need counseling. My brother said to me recently, and I really liked it, he said everybody needs counseling at some point in their life. And that doesn't need to be professional counseling. A friend in your church, a stable brother or sister can help, can hear, and that can heal. Think about pain being the preparation for a greater purpose that God would have you fill. And remember that God understands and will walk with you. God bless you.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.